Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to this edition of Africa Link this Monday, the 29th of January 2018. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. Just to remind you, we are also live on Facebook. Feel free to share the audio and give us your comments.
On the program today, African heads of states meeting in Addis Ababa for the annual African Union Summit call for stronger international cooperation and an end to other social vices like corruption that have for long held back the continent.
Well, this summit was mainly focused on how African countries, the 55 members of the African Union, can fight corruption and how to get the African Union to be more independent and how to get them to be more effective.
At the same time, African leaders strongly condemn U.S. President Donald Trump's use of derogatory words to describe some of their countries. This is what the AU Commission Chairperson Moussa Faki had to say.
La banalisation de la xénophobie.
The rise of national egoism and xenophobia are all significant symptoms and signals. It's as if the value of solidarity, equality and justice are receding.
And some of you are already commenting on, you know, the African Union summit, like Henry Cheku says, they've been having this summit for decades now without any results or achievements. Keep those comments flowing. Also on the program, Afghanistan is still coming to terms after an attack in its capital, Kabul, left at least 11 soldiers dead, the latest in a string of attacks in the troubled country.
These are some of the stories that we have lined up for you. But first, here's a chance also to hear what's happening around the world.
I'm Suratan Sanderson with DW News. U.S. President Donald Trump has told African leaders meeting in Addis Ababa that the U.S. profoundly respects its partnership with the continent. In a letter addressed to the African Union, Trump expressed his deepest compliments to all the leaders gathered for the 55th annual AU summit in Ethiopia. The comments came after a public row had erupted earlier in January, with allegations against Trump saying that he had used strong language and derogatory terms referring to African and other developing nations during a congressional meeting in Washington. Trump reportedly also stressed that the U.S. is seeking to increase free, fair, and reciprocal trade with Africa. The East African food crisis appears to continue as large swathes of the continent keep suffering droughts. Somalia is particularly affected, with poor rain pushing the country to the brink of famine last year already. The head of the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, Sergio Innocente, told DW that the situation could get worse, with children suffering the most.
Urgent treatment and nutrition support is needed for approximately 301,000 acutely malnourished children. Of this number, we have 48,000 children that are severely malnourished, for which we really need to intervene immediately. It is projected in the next 4 months to come, we will have over 2.2 million people in crisis and close to 500,000 people that will be in an emergency status.
A report published by several aid organizations earlier says that humanitarian assistance must be sustained in order to prevent further deterioration of the food security and nutrition situation in Somalia. You're listening to DW News. Cambodian authorities have charged 10 foreigners with taking lewd photos at a popular temple. The five British nationals, two Canadians, a Norwegian, a New Zealander, as well as one person from the Netherlands, were alleged to have danced in a pornographic manner at the holy site. The tourists were arrested Thursday at a party in Siem Reap near the country's famed temple complex known as Angkor Wat. They could face 12 months in prison if convicted. European Union ministers have approved a new set of guidelines for a transition period following Great Britain's exit from the EU. The EU is offering the UK a status quo period until the end of 2020, after Brexit is finalised in March 2019. Britain will continue to have access to the EU single market during that time, but the country will have no decision-making power after it leaves the bloc. Coalition talks between German Chancellor Angela Merkel's CDU-CSU and the Social Democrats led by Martin Schulz have been adjourned with all sides still working towards a February 4 deadline. Both parties said they were determined to find solutions to some key disagreements between the parties. A main bone of contention appears to be the prospect of granting family reunifications to refugees who have arrived in Germany in recent years. Labor policy and health insurance issues are also being discussed ahead of the expected formation of another so-called Grand Coalition government. If the talks, however, fail, Merkel would either have to resort to leading a minority government or trigger fresh elections. And for more news and information, please log on to our website at dw.com or download our mobile app. I'm Sertan Sanderson.
Welcome back once again to the program. And straight away, we begin today's program in Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa, where African heads of state have been meeting for a second and final day of the annual summit. The leaders urged stronger international cooperation, at the same time strongly condemned U.S. President Donald Trump's use of derogatory words to describe some of their countries. Musa Faki, the chairperson of the African Union Commission, took swipe at Trump over his remarks. Take a listen.
La banalisation de la xénophobie.
The rise of national egoism and xenophobia are all significant symptoms and signals. It's as if the value of solidarity, equality and justice are receding. We are, of course, pressing our concern in the face of this development and to reiterate our commitment to the values of solidarity, tolerance and mutual respect. Humanity is at stake.
Il y va de la survie de l'humanité.
Musa Faki, chairperson of the African Union. The two-day meeting was chaired by Rwandan President Paul Kagame, who's taking over as the Union's chairman. 23 countries also signed a single African air transport market treaty that is likely to see a drop in airfares. For more on what transpired at the summit, I spoke to DW's Catherine Omwando, who's in Addis Ababa at the venue of the summit.
Well, this summit was mainly focused on anti-corruption and fighting anti-corruption and how African countries, the 55 members of the African Union, can fight corruption. But then there seemed to be more focus on Africa Union reforms and how to get the African Union to be more independent and how to get them to be more effective. Because over the years, Africa Union has been accused of not being effective and you know, being called a toothless dog and coming up with beautiful laws and beautiful policies and like the Agenda 2063, but then there's no political will to implement these policies that would help the ordinary African.
The leaders of Egypt, Ethiopia and Sudan have been meeting on the sidelines of the summit in a bid to break a deadlock in negotiations over a hydroelectric dam Addis Ababa is building along its share of the Nile River. Do we see the Nile waters dispute among these countries ending anytime soon?
That may be a long shot to say that the Nile dispute will be ending anytime soon, because Ethiopia is looking to export its power. It's actually a very ambitious project that's being they're being assisted by the Chinese government, and they're looking to export power and they're looking to improve their economy. As it stands, Africa Union is a union of 55 African states, but then whether or not these states are united, that's a whole different argument altogether, because individual countries are looking to benefit themselves and to prosper in their own ways. But as you know, it's not just the Nile dispute. Ethiopia is also building a dam, Gibe III Dam, which is also affecting Lake Turkana.
Now, it looks like the new African Union chairperson, Rwandan President Paul Kagame, began his tenure in high gear by launching a single African air transport market. Tell us a little bit more on this treaty.
It goes in line with what he wants. You know, Paul Kagame is a Pan-Africanist. He's looking to see free movement of African people by the end of 2018. He wants to see the free movement of goods. And this single airspace market is going to, you know, contribute to the free movement of goods and making also trips shorter, because now we won't have to, you know, make several stops between countries within the continent. But whether or not countries or member states of the African Union will accept this is yet to be seen. Like I said before, they sign treaties, they talk about issues, they come up with wonderful plans, but then implementation is a whole different issue, because a lot of countries claim sovereignty. So they say that we can do whatever we want, how we want. That's paramount compared to whatever agreement is made here in the African Union.
DW's Catherine Omwano in Addis Ababa. And Zippy, loads and loads of comments coming in on the summit. Please go ahead and read one or two.
Yes, I'll just have one quick read here from Collins Gakon, who seems to agree with what Omwantha just told us and he says AU like UN is a waste of time and resources. These organizations are like firefighters who stand by watching a building in flames but make no effort to quench the fire.
And also Prince Young says for Africa to stand all this old school in the name of leaders should hand power to the youth. What have they ever achieved? Keep them flowing, and we'll definitely read them live on air. And of course, as you heard from our correspondent, Catherine Omwando, in Addis Ababa, Rwanda's Paul Kagame has ambitious plans for the body that has for years been dubbed Africa's toothless dog and to many a talking shop. Here's a report by Sela Oneko.
During the launch of a single African air transport market, Rwanda's President Paul Kagame, who is the chairperson of the African Union for 2018, said the air transport market will gain almost 300,000 direct jobs and millions of indirect jobs. Of the 55 members of the AU, 23 countries have signed relevant documents to construct the market.
Today, we will launch the single African air transport market. This is a major step forward for transportation. We are nearly ready to adopt the Continental Free Trade Area.
The Single African Air Transport Market is a project of the African Union Agenda 2063, an initiative to create a single unified air transport market in Africa as an impetus to the continent's economic integration agenda.
Sela Oneko with that report on President Paul Kagame and his plans for the African Union.
And of course, Isaac, many people have been asking if this is the solution. Like, can we travel cheaper to other countries by plane?
Yeah, we wait to see because 23 of the 55 countries, agree to the plan. And of course, as usual, the African Union, you have to wait and see whether things will materialize or they'll be the same. Let's wait and see.
Yeah, and now we proceed on to Afghanistan, who are still coming to terms with an attack in its capital, Kabul, which has left at least 11 soldiers dead after Islamic State militants attacked troops guarding a military academy. The Islamic State has claimed responsibility for the attack near the Mashal Fahim Military Academy. It is the latest in a wave of relentless violence this month by the Taliban and the rival Islamic State group. Why are we seeing a rise in IS attacks in Kabul? A question DW's Sumi Somaskanda put across to Tahir Kadir, a journalist in Kabul.
Well, I would say it shows the failure of the Afghan security forces. I know that the Afghan government is quite busy with blaming the neighboring countries for such attacks, but it literally shows that the senior security officials, they are not capable of ensuring the security of a capital where at least 5 million people are living there. People are really horrified, people are really fed up, and people are taking up other actions, like, you know, they are planning protests to ask the senior security officials to sit down. Yesterday, for example, the three security ministers, they appeared in a press conference. One of them was saying that no one is capable to replace them, which is quite funny and shameful, because that literally shows it is being, you know, Afghanistan is now, the security is being led by a small clique of people who are incompetent.
So why have security forces been so unable to stop this surge of violence?
Well, because the problem is the Afghan government is so busy these days with petty politics and internal politics. You know, politicians accusing each other of, you know, what is happening as what they call it as conspiracy theory. So that's why they forget a higher and more important priority, which is ensuring the security of people. So that is why that has been sidelined, to be honest. For example, in Kabul alone, we know that at least more than 20 terrorist groups operate. So how could they operate while we have, while we have too many intelligent service soldiers and agents here? But unfortunately, still people on a daily basis, they experience such terrorist attacks, which is quite shameful, and that is a massacre.
Tahir Kadiri, a journalist in Kabul, talking to DW's Sumi Somaskanda.
And at this time, we'd like to welcome our followers on Facebook. Like I told you before we started this show, our main story today is the African Union Summit that is ending. And of course, we also have other stories come your way. Just don't go away. We still have a lot for you ahead. Keep commenting on the stories. Just go to our Facebook page, DW Africa. Leave your comment there. And if you want, or if you wish, leave also your name and where you're based. And we'll read it live here on air. Welcome back shortly after that interlude. In case you've just joined us, this is DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, cancer cases in Zimbabwe on the rise, making it the number one killer in the country.
I came here mainly because of family history. My mother had cervical cancer, and it's something that was tragic in our life.
Tell us what you think about how cancer can also be tackled where you are by going on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Leave your comment there, and we'll read it after the story.
But before all that, we begin our series on genetically modified foods, or GMOs, as they are commonly known. In Uganda, farmers are increasingly worried that their introduction would lead to new diseases and nutritional problems, among other side effects. Firstly, genetically modified foods are organisms created in a laboratory using genetic modification. In 2017, Uganda's parliament passed a bill which would allow Ugandan farmers to grow genetically modified crops, but President Museveni declined to sign it into law until there are assurances that indigenous crops will be protected. From Kampala, Frank Iga sent this report.
GMOs are going to lead us to lose our local traditional indigenous crops, losing the seeds. We have to lose also the ingredients in them because they will be engineered to change.
Isaac Kabanda works for the Slow Food Foundation in Uganda. Perhaps not surprisingly, they have been one of the biggest groups lobbying the government to change its mind about GMOs.
In Uganda already we have more than 65 different species of local varieties of bananas, which they want to put in one variety of banana, which they call the super banana. This means we are going to lose the other 65 varieties of banana, which are consumed differently.
But not everyone is worried. Arthur Makara, the executive director of the Science Foundation for Livelihoods and Development, tells me genetically modified technology has been misunderstood by the public and policymakers.
People in Uganda seem not to feel what happens in the rest of the country, including the neighboring countries, because this technology is already being used there, because it works. Genetic engineering, understanding the gene of these crops, working with advanced tool of science is one of the methods that we can be able to rescue these crops that are under siege by disease and pest.
Caps Fungaro Hassan is one of the MPs who opposed GMOs on the floor of parliament. He explains the bill unfairly gives patent rights to the proprietors of the new genetic material at the expense of the communities that originally developed the crop. This could have much wider implications, he thinks.
The GMO bill, we have to import planting materials from abroad, from those who control the genes that determine what germinates and what doesn't germinate. This is like handing over ourselves to be slaves in the hands of foreigners. Therefore, we people of Uganda must not accept.
Yes, doctor. Nice to meet you, sir.
Yes, nice to meet you.
The argument gets more complicated at the National Research Laboratories. Dr. Wilberforce Tushemereidwe thinks that used correctly, GMO technology could also help Uganda's crops and food producing potential.
There are situations where we need genetic modification to solve problems. Take example like drought. We are already trying to use a technology which will prolong the plant for like 3 more weeks during that time, but it's not possible to do it using ordinary means.
At the Uganda Food Alliance, Agnes Chirabo, the executive director, thinks President Museveni is right to question whether the bill has enough provisions in place to really govern the technology once it has been planted across the country.
For me, in principle, that is the agreement that you are treading a risky ground. So the debate as to whether the technology has risks or it doesn't have risks, it's not debatable. How do we make sure that we have provisions within our law that emphasize on issues of bioethics? Because the president is raising concern of using poisonous and dangerous substances while manipulating the genes. So how do we create provisions for that within the law? For me, the debate should take that angle. In principle, it's risky.
Agnes Jaribo from the Uganda Food Alliance.
And that report, of course, was by Frank Yiga in Kampala. It is the first of our series on GMOs. Now, there's a debate going on, Zippy, in Uganda, whether Museveni to sign or not. And equally, on our Facebook page of users, they have another debate.
You're
Men
right.
are wondering, is President Museveni doing the right thing? Listen to this comment. And his name is Safari. He says, if only people knew how dangerous these GMOs are, when you consume them, your body starts to change from the way it normally operates. Let us look for other ways to feed our people because diseases like cancer and diabetes are on the rise in Africa.
Waziri Dean says, I support the idea of us addressing the issues raised, but GMOs causing diseases is not one of them.
Well, Ekojot Felix Ichati said, I agree with you, Safari. Safari was the first comment I read. Yeah. He says, why are GMOs never allowed in the American markets? A question to ponder there, isn't it?
Yes.
And Matthew Stoy says, I don't care if Museveni does this and that better. The matter is for him to pull out from power. That's what people demand, not any kind gifts.
Gima Haile says, GMO proved by the West that it is harmful and returned back to the natural. So are African countries now accepting this?
I mean, the debate like, you know, we had in that report by Frank Higa should continue until, you know, ways, you know, to see whether Africa's indigenous crops will be protected. Keep the debate flowing on our Facebook page, W Africa. And we'll be back right after this.
Health check.
Now, in a related development, but not so closely, in Zimbabwe, cervical cancer is reported to be killing 4 women each day, accounting for 33% of cancer cases. Like other non-communicable diseases, cancer is slowly overtaking HIV and AIDS as the top killer in the Southern African country, amid reports that 80% of cases are detected at the end stage. To this end, health authorities in Zimbabwe have partnered with Chinese Hunan Provincial Maternal and Child Health Hospital to screen and treat women for cervical cancer. The pilot project is targeting 1,000 women. From Harare, DW correspondent Privilege Mushaniri filed this report.
Best I can describe 2017 has been a horrific year. It's been horrifying for our family to lose 2 siblings or 2 family members, very close family members, in the same year.
This is Richard Chidza, a Zimbabwean senior political journalist, describing tragic moments in his family. Chidza lost 2 siblings, his brother in February to throat cancer and a sister in December 2017 to cervical cancer. Chidza also lost his father to prostate cancer in 1994. He says each day they survive, they take it as a gift from God. He believes methods of testing and screening cancer in Zimbabwe are weak and should be improved to save lives.
Our government should be able to fund this. If they can do it with HIV and AIDS, I think we can do the same thing. And our scientists must try and look at cancer and see if we can have better, more effective methods of looking and detecting cancer in initial stages.
The spike in the cancer cases is being linked to changing lifestyles where locals are now consuming highly processed foods. Dr. Ndabaning Simango, a cancer specialist at Zimbabwe's biggest referral hospital, explains.
Cervical cancer in Zimbabwe contributes to, I think, about 33% of cancer. So it's the highest, it's the commonest cancer in women. So it means either we are not screening, which we know we don't. The discussion should go towards, let's get screened. If you are going to use a method, use what you can afford. If you can afford the best, then use the best.
Most women in rural areas cannot afford cervical cancer screening, leading to most cases being discovered at an advanced stage. And because of that, international partners have stepped in to help, and now a pilot project to screen about 1,000 women is underway. Over 500 women between the age of 25 and 65 have been screened, with more coming before the program that ends on Wednesday this week. At Harare's Parenyatwa Hospital Family Clinic, women are queuing to get screened. Many are thankful to the free screening being offered by the center. I visited the clinic and spoke to some of the women who had come for the screening.
I came here mainly because of family history. My mother had cervical cancer, and it's something that was tragic in our life as we were growing up. So it's one thing that we have really considered, and as a family we actually push each other to go for screening, testing HIV cancer on a regular basis, because it's just one of those things that really shook us.
Despite numerous cancer screening institutions the government has set up, statistics show that 13% of women at risk have bothered to go for screening. One can only hope Zimbabwean women will soon take the responsibility of getting early screening seriously.
Privilege Mshani with that report on cancer. And it's that time of the week when we give you another dose of sports. And I can see next to me here, Zippy is all set. I mean, to take us through sports. Zippy, over to you.
Of course, I'm looking forward because the stage is set for the African Nations Championship CHAN Soccer Tournament semifinals in Morocco. Host Morocco will face Libya, while Nigeria's Super Eagles plays Sudan in the other semifinal on Wednesday. The continental tournament features players only in their own domestic leagues. Samson Omale has more.
The Super Eagles beat Angola 2-1 after extra time following a 1-1 draw in the normal time. Gabriel Okechukwu scored the winner in the 109th minute of the match to seal their semi-final spot against Sudan in Marrakesh. Nigerian assistant coach Salisu Yusuf, who is in charge of the CHAN assignment, says he is content with his team's performance this far.
Angola qualified as a quarterfinal with only one goal. So it's not a matter of how many goals you score. It's a matter of you are not conceding and you can score one and qualify. I think that's the most important.
In the late kick-off on Sunday, Libya progressed into the semis after beating Congo 5-3 in a penalty shootout following a 1-1 draw after extra time. The former champions, Libya, will now meet host Morocco, who defeated Namibia 2-0 in Casablanca. I talked to some sports fans here in Abuja who have expressed mixed reactions on the upcoming semifinals.
Honestly, I was kind of skeptical. I thought we're unlikely going to make it that far. And I think now that they're going to, you know, face Sudan, I think they're going to do better.
I think Nigeria will qualify to the final. But Sudan is a very good team. They have a good squad. Their last match, they played better than the opponent.
Sudan were lucky against Zambia in the quarterfinal, but for me, the best team in this competition so far has to be the host, Morocco. They have the top scorer. They have one of the best teams, even on the best side, and they are very hard nuts to crack.
In women's football, Nigeria and Ghana will represent the continent yet again at the FIFA Under 20 Women's World Cup. They qualified after edging out South Africa and Cameroon respectively over the weekend. The Falconets of Nigeria beat South African side Besasana 6-0 and 8-0 on aggregate. Ghana's Princesses won 3-0 against their Cameroonian counterparts to claim the other slot 4-1 on aggregate. They will be making a return to the Under-20 Women World Cup Finals in France from the 5th to the 24th of August. Youssef Basige is the coach of the Black Princess of Ghana.
It was my dream to qualify to the World Cup, but I knew it was not going to be easy because for qualifiers, you can't underestimate any country. I knew I could qualify, but it was not going to be easy task.
Arsenal is close to an agreement to sign Gabon striker Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang from Borussia Dortmund for around €65 million, but the transfer will not be sanctioned until Dortmund has a replacement lined up, with Arsenal's Olivier Giroud among the reported options. Arsenal has already had two bids for the striker rejected by Dortmund. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang was back in action for Dortmund for the first time since the 16th of December as they drew with Freiburg over the weekend. But what do football fans make of the latest saga of Aubameyang's transfer so far?
It's a good thing for both the club side, that is Arsenal, and the player Aubameyang, because definitely he will be able to get playing time regularly in Arsenal. And of course, Arsenal needs someone that is a fighter and, of course, a better goal scorer.
We have a few days to sort out transfers, and definitely Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's future is one of those balance, but definitely it looks like he's heading to North London.
Sports fan giving their views on Aubameyang's intended move to Arsenal. And that report was compiled by Samson Omale.
And before we call it a day, a reminder of our top story today. African heads of state meeting at Sababa for the annual African Union Summit called for stronger international cooperation and other social vices like corruption that have long held back the continent. And at the same time, African leaders strongly condemned US President Donald Trump's use of derogatory words to describe some of their countries. Remember, tomorrow tomorrow we'll bring you another story on our series, Genetically Modified Organisms or GMOs. Stay tuned tomorrow. And on behalf of the rest of the team, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura. Bye for now.